You're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM WOMMLP, Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and this is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. And today on Write the Book, you're going to hear an interview with Bob Boyd, local writer and Burlington-based Tai Chi teacher. Bob Boyd began his martial arts training in 1968. He received his first degree black belt in Yuichi Ryu Karate, which is Okinawan, in 1971. Bob trained directly under Grandmaster Kane Uechi in 1973 and continued to study karate until 1985 when he retired as a fourth degree black belt. Bob began his Tai Chi training in 1983 under John Conroy of Providence, Rhode Island. Bob met Grandmaster Ip Tai Tak in 2000 and was formally accepted as his disciple and given the Chinese name Bao Tak Fai in 2001. Bob Boyd is the executive director of the Bao Tak Fai Tai Chi Institute in Burlington and is founder of the International Snake Style Association with certified and affiliate schools throughout North America, Europe, and Asia. His new book is Snake Style Tai Chi Chuan, The Hidden System of the Yang Family. The Yang family taught two separate Tai Chi systems, one for the public and another just for heirs. When Robert Boyd became a disciple of fifth generation Yang family heir Ip Tai Tak, he was allowed to learn the family system, the snake style. And in his new book, he reveals this duality and introduces the snake style openly to the public. When I spoke with Bob Boyd at his studio last week, I asked him to begin by reading from the opening of Snake Style Tai Chi Chuan.
Back in the early 70s, while many of my friends were backpacking through Europe, I went backpacking to the tiny island of Okinawa in the South China Sea. At that time, Okinawa was a staging area for the Vietnam War, and I soon found myself in a hostile environment, surrounded by thousands of American GIs and the prostitutes that serviced their needs. But I wasn't a GI, and I wasn't on the island because of the prostitutes. I was there to study karate with Okinawan masters. I was a young man possessed. I lived, breathed, and dreamed karate. After 5 years of obsessive training and the promotions to first and second degree black belt, a trip to Okinawa seemed to me to be the perfect next step in my development as a martial artist. After nearly 2 months in Okinawa, I was rewarded with a promotion to third degree black belt. At 23, I had put myself on the martial arts map. I was proud of my achievement, but troubled by a reality that I could not ignore. My karate was clearly inferior to that of my Okinawan counterparts. Their movements were fluid, where mine were stiff, and their strength seemed drawn from deep inside, where mine was derived from pure muscle. What was I missing? Shortly after my return to the U.S., I posed this question to one of my teachers. His answer? They have different hip structure. After that pearl of wisdom, I kept my concerns to myself. Later that year, I finally met an American karate practitioner who displayed the intrinsic strength and fluid movements I had seen on Okinawa. He was also the toughest martial artist I had ever met. I had found my next teacher. But I was soon to discover something surprising about my new teacher. In addition to karate, he was also a serious practitioner of Tai Chi Chuan, studying under a famous Chinese master. One day, he took me to his Tai Chi class, where I watched him being repeatedly thrown against the wall by this smaller, somewhat rotund Chinese man. I was baffled, mystified, and of course, immediately drawn to Tai Chi. I had read that Tai Chi used soft and subtle power to defeat brute force, but seeing it in person against a powerful karate man won me over. Eventually, it won my teacher over, too, because within a few years, he had retired from karate to devote himself solely to Tai Chi Chuan. There was no other choice but to follow his path. By the mid-90s, my conversion was complete. I was running a successful Tai Chi school in Vermont, and my former karate teacher had become a senior student of his Tai Chi master. By then, I had met the master on several occasions, but I had never trained directly under him until I was invited to a seminar in 1995. I carefully scrutinized the master's movements that day. When the videotape of the seminar arrived, I watched it over and over again. I didn't want to believe what my eyes and my gut instincts were telling me, but ultimately I had to admit that I was facing the same problem I had faced as a young man many years before in Okinawa. The master's form was not only superior to mine and my teacher's, it was different. Again, I wondered what I was missing. It was not until my second trip to Asia, this time in 2000 to Hong Kong, that I finally got my answer. Those familiar with Chinese martial arts know that the special significance Hong Kong has maintained since 1949, when Mao Zedong drove the nationalists from mainland China. While many intellectuals, government officials, and artisans fled to Taiwan, some, including many premier martial artists, managed to cross the border into British-held Hong Kong. Yang Xiaocheng, the eldest son of Yang Chenfu, an heir to the family's Tai Chi dynasty, was one of the fugitives who narrowly escaped to Hong Kong. It was there that he would eventually train his future first disciple and the man who would one day show me what I was missing, Ip Tai Tak.
Thank you for reading that. What inspired you to write Snake-Style Tai Chi Chuan, The Hidden System of the Yang Family?
Well, believe it or not, it all started with your radio show.
Get out.
You had mentioned Linda Bland had interviewed for you, and her older brother was and is a good and very dear friend of mine. And I also, when I was copywriting and doing, you know, copywriting advertising work, I noticed in the paper that she had come back to the Burlington area and was, you know, doing some writing and editing. And so I listened to your radio interview on
with
the
Linda.
Internet.
Okay, great.
With Linda. And I had written at the time a memoir about my, it was sort of like a Dave Barry memoir, because it was, there were so many funny and weird stories, and having had weird teachers and been in weird and odd situations in my martial arts career, that I put it all down and called her up, called Linda, and she said, well, send me 10 pages. And so I did, and then after that she called and said, you know, could we meet? So we met out front here in front of the school and had coffee, and we sort of caught up with each other's lives, and I started telling her about, you know, this situation I had found myself in my career, where I had been invited to Hong Kong and had met a master and petitioned to be his disciple and was accepted, and you know, all of a sudden, you know, he tells me the Tai Chi I've been doing is, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to forget it all. He's going to show me the real thing, the snake style. And before we ever got to my memoir, she just looked at me and she said, you know, Bob, your first book should be about your Tai Chi. And I said, no. But I want to, you know, do something more creative. And yet, in the back of my head, you know, I had known that I needed to put this down at some point in some book form. And so I took her advice, and I started writing. And, you know, it just kind of flew out of me, because, you know, it was my story and you know, what I really understood the material, obviously. But it was very short. People said, well, you know, it's good and short. And I said, well, it's everything I have to say, you know. So that's it.
On this subject,
right. So I had my old copy chief, Pat Lampson, read it. And she said, you know, it's very good. But I especially like the stories about Master Ip, my teacher. And, you know, I didn't want this to be a dry instructional book, so, you know, I tried to liven it up with some stories from my visits to Hong Kong. And, well, you know, a big light went off, you know, oh boy, well, I've got a lot more of those. And then the fun began, because the storytelling began, and that's really what I like to do. So
That's interesting because you said that originally when Linda suggested you write the book, you were wanting to do something more creative. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, this is really creative.
Yeah, I know.
So
but you know,
able
it's.
To integrate those stories.
Yeah, it's just sort of like, yeah, but, you know, it's not the great American novel, you know, so.
Sure.
But anyway, the fun began because I had been to Hong Kong 8 times and there was just so many stories. So I divided the book into 2 parts. One about the snake style, and 2, I called them stories from my master or something like that. And then we had our annual Tai Chi retreat, and I ran into Dana Yetton from Middlebury, a playwright and longtime student and friend, and he said, well, I'd like to read this thing. So I sent him a copy and emailed him. And then he got a hold of me and said, you know, I think you can do a lot more with this. And I said, well, all right, I'm all ears. And he said, I think we ought to integrate the stories into the other text. And I said, well, you know, I don't know how to work that. You know, I mean, so anyway, he became my... Probably not by choice or anything. It just he became my editor, and it really boy what a tremendous opportunity that was for me because he's such a great guy. He's very smart, and I hadn't worked with a copy chief or someone like that in a long time, and I could see, you know, I understood what he was doing. You know, he was trying to, you know, bring more out and get me to do more, and. So one, even to a point where one day I drove down to Middlebury and we were in his house and we had papers all over the place. This story and that, you know, that part of the book, and we were mixing and matching, you know, doing it the old-fashioned way. And I, you know, went back again, you know, to the book and started to integrate the stories. And then I realized, you know, every one of these points about the snake style can be supported by an actual story, you know, that you know, a Master Rip story.
Yeah.
And so that led to more stories because I found a place where I didn't have a story and I said, is there a story that would go with this point? And I, sure enough, I always found one. So finally, you know, I wrote all the stories. You know, Dana was constantly, we were going back and forth with his edits and his suggestions. And the only thing that, you know, the odd thing, that final sort of kind of decision was about the title. And it makes me realize that we're living in this age of search engine optimization because Dana had said something about, he had written in one of his notes as if it was hidden in plain sight. And as soon as I saw that, I said, that's my book title. And because it said perfectly the story about these Chinese people who, teachers who taught one thing, who did one thing and taught another thing, but it was so hard to see, as I just read in my introduction, you know, I could see something else was going on, but I couldn't put my finger on what the difference was. And the answer was that they were doing something differently and not teaching it.
Right.
So it was a perfect title. And then Dana talked me out of it.
He talked you out of it.
Yeah, because, you know, he said, you know, when people go looking for the book, and when people, you know, it's about the snake style of Tai Chi. And so I was sort of disappointed, but now I realize that, you know, he was right. And it is about the snake style of Tai Chi. And you know, when it first got on Amazon... you know, it was down like 30. I didn't even think it was on there, and I called the publisher, and he said, "Oh, it's on there. It's just number 35." And I said, "Well, you know, how many snake style Tai Chi books can there be?" And it was just because Tai Chi brought up, you know,
okay.
That's how that works.
So many different.
So I mean, it would have to be hits and people starting, to, you know, for it to move up. So it was the right decision. I still like that title from my own creative sense, you know, of what I. What it says, it really says a lot about my experience, but I think he was right, and so we stayed with that dull
oh no
cover.
Well, you still got the hidden system.
Yeah, and that was how I, yeah.
Well, so before we talk any more about details in the book, I think it would be helpful if you just take a minute to talk a little bit about the difference between snake-style Tai Chi and what you used to practice, which was tiger-style Tai Chi.
Right.
So just, you know, maybe for people who don't quite know a lot about Tai Chi, what would mark those characteristics?
Well, you know, first of all, Tai Chi, to me, was Tai Chi, so it was always a matter of, I knew that there was lots of different kinds of Tai Chi, or lots of different ways of doing it, some way watered down, you know, some, and I was in this very, you know, I had a very intense teacher, and I was doing, I wouldn't have, you know, left karate for Tai Chi if I didn't think it was a martial art. Some people didn't see it, don't see it as a martial art. But I really felt like I was connected to the best possible training in Tai Chi that you could find in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was invited to go to Hong Kong, you know, this was 17 years after I've been doing and teaching Tai Chi. And so I, you know, when I went to Hong Kong and met Master Ip and eventually became his disciple, and then his first, you know, it may have been the first discipleship ever done, you know, through with the help of email to his daughter back and forth, where she would communicate, you know, what he, you know, wanted me to hear about, you know, wanted to talk to me about, did I really want to do this, blah, blah, blah. And, but one of the first emails that sort of came was this email that said, you must forget everything you've done in Tai Chi, including all of your practice habits, and empty your cup so that I can fill it with fresh tea. To me, that said, okay, this is a different teacher, so he's got a different approach. But it can't be a different thing, because Tai Chi is Tai Chi. So, of course, I had had this experience before in my career, going to a different teacher and just, you know, doing what he wanted me to do and trying to, you know, kind of forget about the other way I'd done it. But I was to find out, which is the basis of the book, that there was another way of doing Tai Chi, and this has got to do with, you know, the form. The Tai Chi is a long, basically the root of it is in this long form, but it's about how you do it. And, you know, how you do it, I taught one way and was taught one way. And really what I, you know, was learning was that this was really, really different. It was a different approach. And now I can look at it in terms of, you know, modern body work and, you know, yoga and things, that really it was a core body exercise, that movement was initiated through a union of muscles, internal muscles, starting at the foot, but had a lot to do with the iliopsoas area. It's all, you know, in the book and diagrammed, muscles in the spine. And these are muscles I never ever used in Tai Chi. My Tai Chi was propelled more or less by pushing from one leg to the other and shifting the center of gravity. This was all about kind of gathering up the strength inside and moving my body with my body.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a total, I mean, really, apples and oranges. You know, here's, and here's what the book's about, because, you know, all over YouTube and everything, I mean, here's Tai Chi. This is Yang style Tai Chi. Watch Chinese people do it. Watch everybody do it. And yet, this was Yang Tai Chi that I was being taught, but a whole different way of doing it.
Yeah.
And more importantly, there's this body of information in Tai Chi. Anybody who starts a Tai Chi Yang style class gets this sort of, here are the rules that the Yang family put down, the principles. And I knew them. I'd believed I was doing them for, you know, for all those 17 years. And then I began to realize I never understood what they meant. But now they were becoming clear to me. And then instead of these being sort of vague, you know, sort of, you know, translated, you know, almost, you know, like the Tao Te Ching type of kind of stuff, it was really more or less almost like your car manual. They're really saying, okay, here's what you do with your body. And that's when I realized, you know what, this is the Tai Chi that they were writing about and that everybody reads about, but nobody's really doing. And of course, you know, that upset a lot of people when I started talking about this, but those principles fit hand in glove to the Tai Chi that I was taught by Master Rip. And then I realized they never really applied to the Tai Chi I did for all those years before. So here I was learning this system and realizing that there was really no one else doing this, and that by the old Chinese method of father to son, and in the case of Master Rip, there were no sons, just daughters, so Master Rip was taken, and then I was given permission to learn this. And the big difference between generations prior to my sixth generation Yang family was that my teacher said, go ahead and open this up, which was really, I wouldn't have done it if he
opened it up to other people.
Yes, in other words, the secrecy's over. Let's let the cat out of the bag, so to speak. Of course, he didn't say it that way, but
that was a question I had, because when he started teaching you, you have a story in the book about how he started teaching you, but another one of his students kept correcting what you were doing that you had just learned from him. So I wondered if you had to get permission to write this book, or did anyone have right of first refusal about anything that you would want to include?
Well, I get myself in a position for the first time in my life in a career that is now going on 45 years or something, to be able to make my own decisions. Master Rip died in 2004. The only people who I wanted to make sure were okay with it were the family, which was mainly his daughter Mabel, who's a good dear friend of mine, but also her brother, and she defers to him often in many things because he's the older sibling. I wanted to make sure they were okay with it, but they were really happy with the relationship that I had with their father. They knew I was really serious about learning his they'd had an experience with another disciple. It didn't work out too well. So they saw that I was really, really, really wanted to learn from him, and therefore he was really open and excited about teaching me, and they trusted me. And so, they both said, fine, go ahead.
That's huge.
Yeah, it is really huge. I mean, the whole story is very huge, and it's kind of funny because, people are people, and people seem to want to make things greater than they are, but I got in a situation where I was able to learn this system. I had spent my whole life pursuing this stuff, and I found myself, who knows, luck or work or combination of things, in this position to learn this Tai Chi form. But more importantly, that this Tai Chi is really has so much to offer. It's deeper and it's more fitness Tai Chi. It gives so much more back physically. And in the book, you'll read that I was getting injured. I was wearing down parts of my body based on supposedly correct ways of doing things. And then I realized, no, they weren't correct. They were all sort of, it was like misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. And that lack of openness. So people were trying to do things, trying to imitate the look of the teacher's body. It's a very dangerous thing because he or she is making something happen internally. And if they don't tell you how they're doing it, if you start trying to figure it out, you can really go down some bad paths. And one of them, what certainly leads to injury. And the snake style is actually, I've rehabbed these problems thanks to the snake style. So it's just been a great thing. So people need to know that, as Tai Chi's image starts to move in a direction where it's like as the image of Tai Chi starts to drift towards the infirmed and the old, the elderly, the people with a disease or sickness, I'm trying to bring it back into, trying to do really what happened in yoga, which was yoga was seen, by people as sort of a very passive thing. And I think it might have been the book, Beryl Birch Bender, maybe the name. There was a book called Power Yoga, and I think that made a big change in the perception of yoga. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, football players are doing yoga, athletes are doing yoga. Yoga's a good thing, it's core body work. This Tai Chi is equal to that kind of practice, but the Tai Chi that most people are doing and seeing is not going to give you that. But this Tai Chi does. It's core body work through movement, and that's very interesting. I mean, through choreographed movement.
In a way, it's funny. You mentioned before that some people don't see Tai Chi as a martial art, and in a way, I would think that's to its detriment, that people are coming from martial arts toward it, whereas yoga was seen as a different thing, and then it became accepted as more powerful than they had even ever expected, whereas martial arts seem like such a...
Yeah, right, yeah, and the thing is that you know, the old yoga, like, you know, you're just going to sit there and stare at your navel, you
right.
know, from the old days,
right.
became this, you know, hey, it's a workout, you know,
powerful
hey, you
workout,
know.
Yeah,
yeah so here this Tai Chi was really... you know, bringing all of that to bear in my body, you know, having to do this kind of work, and I was getting stronger and healthier and more flexible, and, you know, at an age where a lot of that can go the other direction. So then I thought, well, here's what Tai Chi, the story of Tai Chi is about longevity. But what does longevity mean? Not just how old you live, but what's the quality of your life? And for me, now in my 60s to be able to feel that kind of youthful vigor and strength and flexibility in my body is just really, well, you know, speaks for itself. But the thing is, with the book and with my situation is, you know, I want to get this out so people have a choice. I think what I'm saying is that and I want them to see that this snake style Tai Chi is an option if they're interested in Tai Chi, and you know, not everybody's going to want to do it, but it should be made aware of. And I think that was the what I was hoping the book would do.
Yeah. Have you ever used Tai Chi principles in an unexpected practice, like a confrontation or something like that? Have you ever found yourself needing to either use them or hold yourself back from using them?
I can't say that I have. I mean, you know, it's funny how it works. I think how many people end up, you know, being assaulted, you know, and hopefully nobody, but it happens.
Right.
But I mean, you know, in any life, you know, I did a lot of sparring, I did a lot of fighting and karate, and I did a lot of what's called push hands and tai chi. But the real thing about acquiring the confidence in yourself that you've got a skill, that you can take care of yourself in that respect, if that were to happen, and, you know, heaven forbid that kind of thing comes up. I think it gives you a sort of, I don't know, it's a presence that I think makes you less likely to be prey for someone who wants mm-hmm. to kind of do that. I think they may just sort of see something in your eye or just sort of something about your bearing that just says, nah, you know, I don't think I want to mess with this guy. It's not about trying to show that off. I think it's either there or it's not.
Yeah.
But I think when it's there and you know it, it gives you a certain kind of comfort, you know. And the real use in terms of confrontation isn't just physical, as we all know. There's plenty of stresses out there. Dealing with them in an even, you know, with an even keel. You know, I always would tell people about Tai Chi. I'd say, you know, some people don't see it as a martial art, and yet people love in movies the hero, the Clint Eastwood type, you know, the gunfighter. What's the quality that he has that people admire? And that's absolute calm under the highest stress situations. You know, they're shooting bullets at his feet, and he's finishes his shot and, you know, his stogie before he deals with the situation. Because people would really like to be able to be that way under duress and under stress. And, you know, that is a quality of living. If you can sort of have that in a real sense of it, not pretend you've got it, but if it's really sort of there, I mean, it makes life, again, it kind of evens out, you know, I guess we're all looking to be happy and you know, to have stress-free lives. And, you know, it just helps you deal with those kind of things.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember the deodorant commercial because I used to be a copywriter.
Right.
It was like saying,
about that.
You know, don't let them see a sweat, you know. And then you look at Tai Chi and it's sort of like this, here's the martial art where you don't sweat, you know, where you don't grunt and, you know, you don't do all this stuff. You stay calm. and you're controlling the situation, you know, and that, you know, that's really an admirable thing. I mean, in our culture, we love people who can do that.
Yeah.
They're sort of heroic people in many right. senses.
Right. Well, you just mentioned that you were a copywriter and a freelance writer. So I wanted to know, what about your advertising background helped and where, if at all, did it hinder this type of writing this book?
Well, my copywriting experience was just really was great, mainly because I grew up, one of the things, you know, we all have these sort of things that we know that we can do. You know, one of the things for me was always putting words together. You know, like, that was just something, you know, when I was going through some of my mother's things, and she passed away in August, and I found my little, you know, eighth grade, you know, creative writing contest badge. You know, I mean, so I was, you know, doing stuff with words and writing, and I found another essay contest thing that I had won, and then, you know, that sort of led to going to, you know, into communications at UVM. I worked at the Free Press, you know, as a cub reporter way back. But then the whole thing got dropped for the sake of the martial arts, and I wasn't writing anything until Tai Chi, when I met this guy, the late Charles Birch, and he was an advertising guy, and I was working construction with Linda Bland's brother.
Oh, okay.
I was looking for a way out of that sort of hard work, you know, because I was teaching karate and then Tai Chi. So I said, you know, do you hire writers to write ads? And he goes, well, yeah, I was a copywriter in Chicago and New York, and, you know, my ex-wife, who was a business partner, she was like one of the hot, you know, direct mail writers in New York. And
this is Charles.
Charles and Pat Lampson, and both of them were writers, you know. I mean, Pat had published a couple of books. Charles had published a book of poetry, and writing to them was really important. So when I became, you know, like an intern there, and the training was, you know, it was really important for them that, you know, that I wrote well, and that, you know, and they tried really hard to make it, you know, make me the best I could be. And, you know, there was so much of that was really having to be criticized all the time. You know, the red pen and everything they were handed in, and it was like going through school again, like going, oh, God, you know. Also, I was afraid to bring a piece of copy into either one of them, because they'd go, well, you know, not bad, but, yeah, this is boring, this is dull, and this is too, you know. But when, you know, after that, and I was actually getting paid very, very little, but, you know, I was getting this education. After that, the way I looked at writing words, you know, putting things down, it was so different. You know, I just began to get that editor's head and, you know, start to really work. I mean, you know, I wrote a book about 20 years ago. I tried, you know, because I was excited. I was writing copy and I was feeling good about my writing and thought I'd try something something different. But good writing is really good writing. It doesn't matter whether it's advertising writing or blogging or, you know, tweeting. It's still good writing is good writing, and not everybody understands that. You know,
right,
I mean,
yeah.
There's a Doonesbury. I like Gary Trudeau and Doonesbury very much, and there was this guy Rick Redfern. I don't know if you know the characters, but he was like a journalist who lost his job, and so he became a blogger. He's in, you know, the campaign, and there's a young guy in the Romney camp, and Rick Redfern's there, and the guy, he looks at Rick, and he says, you know, what are you doing? And Rick says, I'm a blogger. And the young guy goes, oh, so are both of my roommates. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, yeah, sure, well, anybody can do that. Well, you know, certainly I was taught not anybody can write, and, you know, often, you know, I ended up, even with, you know, the business letter somebody has or something, they give it to me, and, you know, I can go through it and make it sing a little bit more. And so when it came to the book, I had that craft. I could write it well. But when it came to the stories, that's when I began to get kind of more excited. And of course, I would say some of the text of the book is a lot like writing copy in a way, long copy. But I think the storytelling is where it changes from advertising into trying to tell a story well.
Yeah.
And again, Dana was very helpful with that too, because he's more from the world of storytelling rather than the world of commercial writing. You
right.
know, so
right.
And I learned a lot from Dana. You know, I did. He helped a lot, and I think that will help me, you know, if I get into other writing or other books, which I hope to, but...
Yeah. One thing I really liked about Snake Style Tai Chi Chuan, the book, was that you have photographs of yourself doing some of the moves, and then you also have anatomical photographs of skeletal systems. So I know that, I think Glenn Moody took the picture?
Yes.
Yeah? So he's a local photographer. And then where did you get the skeletal photograph or drawings?
Yeah. What happened was, is it's a good story because I was... Things were changing in my body as I went, you know, as I switched Tai Chis, you know, from the one I had done to the new one, to the snake style. Things were happening, and you know, it's feelings, you know. And, you know, I've been working with my body in the martial arts for a long time, so when I start to feel things change, you know, little messages going on in my body, like, you know, these muscles are sore today, you know, why, and all of that. So I began to feel the changes. And then one day, one of my students handed me a book by a Walfer named Thomas Myers, and the book was called Anatomy Trains for Movement Therapists. And his mother, who lived in New York City, was some kind of a movement therapist. And he gave me the book, and I began to look at it, and those diagrams were there. And I said, you know what? I can see what I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so important, because... it's going on inside of me, but yet it's still muscle and fascia and, you know, connective tissue and all that. And so his, you know, he's, as a movement, as a welfare and a movement therapist, he talks about these unified lines of the body, front and back, sides, you know, lateral lines. And I just said, wow, this is like perfect. You know, this, I look at this image and I, this is what I'm feeling, this connection. And so then I said, oh, how in the world? I would love to have these in my book, but, you know, where do you start?
Get permission, and yeah.
And so I did. I just started, you know, like going on Google, and eventually I went to Thomas Myers people, and they said, no, it's not our, you know, that we don't own that, rights to that. I found the publishing company, and it turned out they do a lot of medical texts and journals and stuff. And finally, I actually got to a person who knew, you know, what I needed to do. I said, I'd really like 7 of these images from the book. And I got this email back. It said, okay, here's what it costs. And if you want to do it, you know, reply to this email and send a check. And I was just like, so, I mean, I was like excited. I said, wow. I can use these, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't much, you know?
I was going to say, it must be cheaper than using, you know, the lyrics to a Beatles song.
Yeah, right. No, I think it was like, I don't know, 200, I don't know if it was in euros, or it was like $270 or something. It was really reasonable. And so all of a sudden I had my graphics.
Great.
And so many people helped me with this. You know, you mentioned Glenn Moody, and bless Glenn, he's such a great guy. And you know, I went in there, you know, to the photo shoot, and Connie, my former partner in advertising, that's her design on the front cover. And there was just so much pro bono stuff. Dana, everybody. I mean, I was just really lucky to have good friends and people with those kind of skills that really helped me put the book together.
Yeah. So, Bob, I wonder if you can talk about this concept, which I've heard before, and you have a section in the book about it. 4 ounces defeats 1,000 pounds.
Well, you know, the idea in the martial arts, there are sort of many different styles, and each culture, you know, Asian culture, Korea, Japan, China, they have their sort of different martial arts, and each has a different strategy.
Right.
And Tai Chi falls into this category, what's called soft style.
Yeah.
So these lines, like 4 ounces defeats 1,000 pounds, they're, Tai Chi is full of them, you know, mm-hmm. and people just love it. But if you really ask somebody, well, tell me what that means, they'll go, well, you know, everybody knows what that means. And say, well, no, I want to know what you say that to me, and I know I've read it 1,000 times. So, but I know, so through my training, I can tell you that, you know, when there is a hard, you know, what you call a hard force, or a, something that's a force that's based on a very, you know, muscular force. The idea of Tai Chi movement is to be able, the principal idea of the martial art of Tai Chi is to break the body balance of the opponent. So when the force comes on you, rather than meet it, you know, you sort of feel where it's coming from, and then with the use of body movement, you redirect it so that it breaks the body balance of the person who's delivering that kind of force.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Chinese were sort of when they said it that way, although it was different, four caddies defeats, I don't know, it wasn't in pounds and ounces, but what they're saying is you're not going to meet, you know, head on. You're going to use a more subtle movement of your body, ever so slightly, but going in the proper direction, feeling the direction of the force, redirecting it, and then looking, you know, for the opening, breaking the balance, and there's the opening. So that's sort of the meaning behind it, because some martial arts really don't, they really deal with things almost like boxers, you know, they just keep throwing punches at each other, and, you know, kind of, whereas this is more or less saying, the force comes, I redirect it to a place where there's an opportunity for me where the opponent's passive, and then I, you know, try to take control of the situation.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Great. I wanted to know if you can offer advice for people who might want to learn Tai Chi. How do they ascertain which teachers in their own area might be qualified? I'm talking about people who aren't right here and would go to see you, for example.
Right.
And how can they be sure that the videos and books that are out there are sources that they can trust?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they now have your book that they can look into. But there are so many, as you said.
You know, that's really tough because there's, you know, Tai Chi in yoga, in karate, for example, if, say, you were on the island of Okinawa, and you wanted to become a karate teacher, you would go through the ranking system, and you'd need to get to fifth degree black belt. Then you'd have to apprentice for 3 years. So by then you'd probably have about 13 years of training. In something like Tai Chi and yoga, as you know, there's yoga workshop, teachers workshops, that's like, you know, it's like one weekend or something, and then, or somebody learns a Tai Chi form and they go out to teach it, and it just, for some reason, that's acceptable, you know. So how do you find somebody who really knows what they're doing, because so many people can make it look good? And that's one of the problems. But there's no possible regulation, because who's going to be the regulator?
Right.
So what I would suggest is, you know, usually we always have people visit our school first, if they're interested, so they can watch it. They can watch the teacher, and they can see the students, they can ask questions. And I think you've got to be careful of the teachers who try to make it something that it's not. And by that I mean they want to be the guru.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to control the situation. They want to be... So a lot of times you never see them do anything. And that's one red flag. I'd say right away, I have an association called the International Snake Style Association, and we have a code of standards, and one of them is transparency. And that's to say, I want your students to see you doing Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that makes it seem really simple, but there's so many teachers who don't.
Mm-hmm.
And by keeping that back, they start to create, in the student's eye, they're larger than life. Oh, he must be able to do this, or he must
right.
be that.
He's too good to actually
yeah.
show me.
So I think if you visit a Tai Chi school and you talk to the teacher, you watch how it's being conducted, you probably, you know, have a feeling if that's something good for you. I would avoid at all costs that, so if you start to see the teacher being revered or, mm-hmm. you know, being held up too high. I've been lucky enough in my life to meet two real masters. One in Okinawa, 1973, and then Master Rip, who became my teacher.
In Okinawa, you mean a karate?
Karate master. Master Kanai Weiji. And then later in Tai Chi, Grandmaster Ip Tai Tat. They were both humble, warm people who wanted to help you. And I've had other teachers who were not that way. But the great ones, and those two were great, great teachers and men. That was a similar quality. And by meeting Master Ip, I was able to have a perspective on a lot that's going on in the Tai Chi world. Some of it I write about in the book, where the teachers are trying to be larger than life. The Tai Chi teacher's role is to teach Tai Chi, not to tell you how to live your life or, you know, talk about your sex life or anything else. You know, there have been problems in yoga and, you know, in other areas because of that kind of thing. The abuse of power.
Okay.
Because the teacher, you know, ends up in a position where he or she's in a position of power or can be. And so I just think to watch out for that, if there's any sense of that when you're looking. And of course, you know, looking at a book or... There's so many out there and there's so much... But I will say one thing. Tai Chi is not done music. And I say that because if you go on YouTube now and you see anybody doing Tai Chi, there's Chinese music behind it. And it's like, you know, everybody copies everybody else. But it's a very silent exercise. You know?
Okay. So let's talk about your writing. What are you working on these days? Are you writing anything now?
Well, I'm blogging and I'm plotting to do something, but I don't know what. I've been in this crazy reading. You know, I've been reading. I've been like nuts. You know, I'm reading classics now, and I don't know where this is leading to. But I mean, I read War and Peace. I mean, I read Anna Karenina. I read Crime and Punishment. I read.
Getting very Russian.
Brothers, I went to the Russian period, and then I went to Dickens, and then went back to The Tale of Two Cities. I've just finished Ivanhoe.
Wow.
And I think I don't know what it is, but I really feel there's a project in me. I wanna do something. I guess I want to do a book.
Yeah.
I'm really still looking for the story. It's just not jumping out at me. I've written a couple of screenplays, but I'm still looking for the story, and I'd really like to do it because I really want to try to take a shot at it again, you know.
Yeah.
And I do think somewhere, because as I'm getting older, the sort of the things that come when you get older, I mean, by numbers, you know, you see life from a certain perspective. You see how people react to you, you know, and you also sort of see the future and its sort of limitations in a way. Like, you got so much time, you know, hopefully. So I think something in that about my generation, I suspect that will be somewhere, the theme's going to be somewhere around that.
Okay.
I've had some thoughts about, you know, because I played music, about a reunion of a band or something like that, but it's just not coming off as being a really good story or really holding water. So I'm waiting for it to jump out of me, but maybe I'm not working hard enough to sort of find it. I don't know, but I guess I would like to do a project with fiction.
Yeah.
But also, I like writing this book, and I've also thought about nonfiction as well, if there was a good subject, you know, that I could find. But
how about the memoir? Are you going to go back to your memoir?
That's a good question.
Because, I think it'd be fascinating to hear all about these different martial arts.
I think I should. You know, I mean, I here we go again. Maybe next time we interview, I'll say, you know what? I went back to that memoir because of this, because of your show, you know? But, the truth is it's sitting there untouched. And I just think maybe that's a good idea. I think maybe that's actually a good transition to get... because that's a little different.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are some really wild, what I might call wild stories in there about things that, in this business of the martial arts, you get some real characters. And and some of them are just really, they're larger than life, and I've got some pretty funny parts of that book that I think people. I'll give you a quick example. I like to tell this story in karate. My first karate teacher chain smoked Camel filterless cigarettes in this very room, sitting where I am. Chain smoked him. His fingertips were yellow. His teeth were yellow from it. Killed him at 56 years old. But to imagine trying, I'm standing in the room, which very room that we're sitting in out there, in my karate pose, waiting for the teacher to come. He walks out into the room with a lit cigarette between his lips and starts adjusting everybody's posture. And when I tell like younger students, about that, they like going, "You got to be kidding me!" And I said, "No, like worse than that. Like some of the smokers would sit around out here in this room, just smoking cigarettes, and it's like hard to believe, but you know what I mean. It's, so it's that kind of what I find really funny. I mean,
yeah.
It was real though.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very real, but." Thinking about it now, like, how could that ever happen? I mean, you wouldn't, of course you couldn't do it, but I mean, he was just one after another, and it killed him.
Do you have any advice for people who are considering writing a book about work that they do or an interest or activity that they want to share with a larger audience?
Well, I think certainly, a lot of it depends on what it is, and in my situation, there are a lot of books on Tai Chi, but, I really encountered a situation where it was really different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of like writing a book, something that's really real, but kind of interesting. And I think...
And your unique experience.
Yeah. And, having someone, an editor, working with a copy chief, in advertising, working with Dana in the book, somebody who can step outside of it, because you get so inside of it yourself,
mm-hmm.
because you write, and it's just so good to have them there going, "Did you think about this?" And you go, "No, but I should." It's like we just said about the memoir, So finding, someone, whether it's a professional or just somebody who understands the process, but yet knows how to stay out of the way, but kind of help you along. I think that's important, And then maybe it might even be a ghostwriter, depending on what you want to, if you get something you really want to say, but you're not a writer, then maybe someone who can help you, find your voice and get it into a book form.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for speaking with me.
You're welcome very much. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Bob Boyd. To learn more about his work and his writing, follow him on Twitter at snakestyle_BB or visit his website and blog at snakestyle.squarespace.com. This week's Write the Book prompt is really just some basic helpful advice, which was suggested by my guest, Bob Boyd. Bob says just sit down and start putting words on paper and the process will evolve. He says if you don't get started, you'll never get finished. He also adds that being prone has always helped him somewhat to come up with ideas. And then he added that if you write in your job, as he used to as a copywriter at Birch & Company, lying down at the office can create difficulties for you. It's not the Mad Men generation anymore. But Bob acknowledges that everyone is different. Lying down might help some people. For others, a walk might be the relaxing activity that gets the ideas flowing. Figure out what works best for you, and then as soon as you have an idea, even if it's in the middle of the night, try to put something on paper. You can always get back to it later, but preserve the idea so that it's waiting for you. Good luck with this prompt or series of tips, and tune in next week for another Write the Book prompt. The show has a Facebook page. If you're a Facebook user, please like us at Write the Book Radio Show on Facebook. If you're interested in sharing this show with out-of-town friends, let them know they can stream it live at theradiator.org every Monday from 2 to 3. So what that means is on a Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock, you go on your computer to theradiator.org, and then there's an area where you click to listen to the stream. And then you have to wait, I think it's like 30 seconds. There's a commercial that you watch, and then you can listen at the website. Archived episodes of Write the Book are also available on iTunes and at the website writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. If you have news about book-related events, if you have comments about the show, if you have a writing prompt that you'd like to suggest, or if you want to request that I try to get in touch with a favorite author, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. The Radiator is here thanks to community support and involvement. WOMMLP is an all-volunteer organization, and more information about getting involved is available online at theradiator.org. This has been Write the Book. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, Burlington, Vermont.